right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. Jay Bird.
Steve.
It is 2 weeks in a row. I have been treated like the voodoo doll pincushion of muskie fishing.
Wow, the injury train continues. What the heck is going on?
Do you remember last year? If so, last year I got a hook through one hand and then the other hand in 24 hours.
Yeah.
So now I've been hooked by clients twice in like a week.
Well,
my hand is just like gone. So it's just ridiculous.
Local hospital must love you.
Oh yeah, my insurance. I've paid my deductible, folks, and they're all bad ones. It's past the
door opens and they go, "Here comes Steve."
There he comes. We'll get out the bite, the hook. I sent Jay a picture tonight of literally giving a thumbs up in front of. They have this box. I know it all too well. This is fish hook removal. And the joke tonight was this is the Steve Paul Memorial Plastic Tote. So that's me. When I die, Jay, they'll be like, well, his achievements were the most times being hooked. I mean, it's like, God, grief. It never ends.
Well, at the hospital here in the Minocqua area, I've seen x-rays of where you could see the lure. You could tell what kind of lure it was. Like there's a guy with a suwak in his skull, mm-hmm. and they had to take this x-ray to see how deep the hooks were or whatever, you know, for whatever reason. And it's like, it looks like a 9-inch weighted suwak. You know, you could see the lead and it was crazy. It's some crazy stories about the injuries. I mean, it could be worse. Maybe it's a good thing you're getting them out of the way early in the season.
I'm getting the tetanus down. I've had more tetanus shots, and thank goodness they're all in my left hand, which I'm left-handed, right? So everything's just far more difficult now. There's nothing like when your fingers swelled up to the size of a freaking sausage.
Cool.
That's what the nurses say, cool. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Holy cannoli, it's time to get on some Walters. All right, folks, welcome to the Walleye Opener Podcast.
Yeah.
No, you know what? It is almost fishing time in the Northwoods.
It is, and finally.
I mean, you wouldn't catch me walleye fishing because I don't know how to do it, but it's that time. We've talked about it. You're going to be able to get on the water here soon. I heard my friend there in Conover. Got a friend in Conover. How do they say it? Conover.
You got to put a Conover.
Conover.
Yeah, you're getting close.
Close enough.
What'd he say?
He said his snow was gone.
Well, let me tell you this one, Steve. Mm-hmm. So I'm driving to work this morning, early in the morning, heading over to the old muskie shop, right?
Oh, know the route also well.
And I pass several lakes on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys were ice fishing.
Right.
I'm not kidding. On Big Arbor Vital Lake, there were some guys ice fishing. Then I get to this intersection, and this little lake, Little Spider Lake, was mm-hmm. almost completely open. And I'm like, you are got to be kidding me. So anyway, it's not going to freeze at night. We got rain and wind coming tomorrow. I think we're going to have ice out locally in a few days on a lot of the lakes. Yeah, so opener is looking good.
It's not all doom and gloom up there in the Northwoods.
Yep. Get the boat ready now.
Get the net there, Bobble. More points for the board there, Bobble.
More points for the board, Bobby.
Oh, man, not me. If you got that reference. More points for the board there, Bobby. Thanks, Dr. Steve.
It's an all-time classic.
Yeah, that's some old school musky VHS in there. So it is time to get out there and get scouting preseason here, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You got the ice coming off. You can go fish some Walters. I'll tell you what. I suck at walleye fishing immensely. All my walleye have come accidentally catching musk, or you know what, in the process of musky fishing. But Jay, I know you're going to go out and do it, and a lot of guys at the shop do it, just for the fact of, A, you're out on the boat. That's a great time to work the kinks out on your stuff. Like, hey, does my trolling motor still work?
The battery's any good. Yeah, right, all that stuff.
Is there a squirrel in here?
Yeah. Is there enough air in my trailer tires?
Right. You know, it just never... Oh, speaking of trailer... Dude, I could do a whole podcast on shit that's gone wrong with my trailer this week, which is my trailer's like 4 months old.
I didn't mean to bring that up.
Oh, my God. So, Jay, I didn't even tell you this before we talked. We were talking before the podcast. So, the thing like that mounts my winch on there, it just broke off. The weld broke.
Well, that's not number three. That's like number five this week Unbelievable.
And I have a custom built trailer that's, whatever. Ox the lever.
Well, it's new.
It's brand new. And it's just like the week from frickin' Schittsburg is what I've had. Catching monster fish. Like the fishing has been great. My good buddy, Josh Krieger, who is a hell of a guide. Guides for Muskie Shop Guide Service, guides out of Eagle River. If you're going to fish up in that area, give him a holler. He's going to be on Muskie Shop TV here soon. Like, the joke was, whose trailer was going to shit the bed every day we've been on the water? So we had, are you ready for this, Jay?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Simultaneous. No running lights. Both of us at the ramp, dude.
Unbelievable.
So you got two, like, he got his fixed, and I helped him. I'm like, okay, dude, we'll go. And I start my truck, and he calls me. He's like, dude, your running lights are out. We're in the in the parking lot forever, right? That goes on.
It's dark out, and you got to try to isolate, which is never easy.
Yeah, what it is, right? Yeah. And what mine boiled down to, I had a nick in a wire that was so infinitesimally small that it was grounding out and blew the fuse. And it's just like, then I find out my Jeep has the weirdest fuses known to man, right? It's just like these stupid freaking, I have a box, literally, 1,000 freaking blade fuses that do not fit my truck, right? They fit in the boat, but of course it would never fit in the truck. You know, and just never ending. That is the guide life, buddy. I'm going to tell you that much. Anyway, that's my vent on trailers. Goodness.
Constant maintenance.
Trailers. Yep. The boats are no issue. It's the freaking trailers. Anyway, but back to it. You got Walters. You can get out on the water. Jay, what's the rundown? Are you live baiting? Like, you guys getting good bait in? I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about, so I'm going to
Live bait, yeah.
I'm going to segue out.
Live bait is super critical, and that is the popular choice in our neck of the woods. So, yeah, we're going to have tons of really good, fresh live bait, whatever's available. You know, people look for exotic stuff like red tails. Sometimes it's not available right away.
What's
I think we're
going
to be able to get them. It's a type of chub.
Chub.
Follow them taps and manners.
Manners.
Yeah, it's a little early for leeches. Leeches don't become available until the water warms up more.
Uh-huh.
Then they can get them. But, we're gonna have it. It's going to be a great opener because, you know, if ice goes off just a handful of days before the actual opener, which is Saturday the 7th of May, so week from tomorrow, should be good. Walleye should be catchable and shallow.
What do you think? Just ask your care.
We're going to have a lot of specials, too, in the shop, too. We got a lot of spinning rod combos that
for
we're running on sale.
Well, that's the
walleye
thing.
Walleye, bass, and panfish. Yeah, I mean, you know, everything except muskie will open up, so.
Well, we got so many guys up there, and a lot of you guys are like, well, we might as well get out. The thing we've talked about for the last few weeks in different podcasts, whether it be Maine or getting out there and doing your scouting early, you know, and it's going to matter because you've got, a month?
Yeah, it's about a month till muskie opener, unfortunately.
So the second you can get out there and figure out what's going on, start watching. You know, so if you can get chubs, right? Jay's got fresh chub. Best chub.
Got chub.
Best chub in the Northwoods. Hands down. Mm-hmm. So you can get you some chub. What did you say? Red tail chub?
red tails, black tails, fat heads.
They make a fat head chub.
Walleye sucker. They're not called fat heads. People call them flatheads.
Can we start a cover band called Fat Head Chub?
Joe Booker and the Flatheads.
Joe Booker and the Chub Boys. Anyway, nonetheless, I mean, you're leased on the water. That's the one thing is this, rods and reels have been tough, and Jay did bring that up, and I'll at least tell you guys this. Rods and reels have been tough because of all the crap that was going on. They did get a mess of good stuff, you know? I'm not advocating not musky fishing. Never going to happen on this podcast, but if you're going to do some scouting. So you did say there's some cool spinning stuff from, what, Daiwa and... I don't know.
13 Fishing, Shimano. Yeah, we've got a ton of stuff. We got a ton of rod and reel. We probably have the best, just in terms of musky reels right now, selection.
That's in a lot.
Anywhere.
Dude, that's
We really did. We scored a lot of different. I mean, you start looking at all the different models within Daiwa alone. I mean, there's dozens of them, and there's hardly, God, I think we've got every model.
Haven't you been fishing the Rhea, Jay? Okay, will he fall for it again, folks?
Nope.
I got him with the last one coming.
Nope.
Well, the thing.
Pro Rex, baby.
Now, there's a lot of stuff that's finally sort of breaking loose from all the stuff we've all been dealing with. On getting things. Yeah, the Tranks are back in. That's been the big question of like, Tranks.
We got some high gear Tranks in yesterday. Yeah. I mean, I
haven't seen that in freaking a decade.
Yeah, last summer or something, early last fall. Long time.
So things are getting back to normal, which is nice to say. So you got that. What else are cool stuff? Okay, couple cool things that have shown up. Yeah. I'm super stoked. You know, me and Joe Booker, we tolerate each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
We know one another, unfortunately. I'm teasing. He's my boy. You guys know it. But we talked him into some killer customs for this year from the fine folks there at the JBO.
That's right.
And probably my favorite, it's coming soon, is, hold on, what are you guys calling it? Black Ice.
Oh yeah,
that thing's freaking money, right? It's a super cool. There's gonna be a 7 and a 5 on it, which is really cool. I'm excited about that. What's the
freaking, and a shell rater? Yeah.
And then the freaking seagull.
Seagull. I don't know if you know the backstory on that.
No.
That thing. 10 years ago, that thing was on fire. We couldn't get them made fast enough.
The roof.
Yeah. Really, really effective color pattern, unique and cool. And it's been like 10 years. So
you missed an opportunity.
They're coming.
There's a missed opportunity there on Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal. Wow.
Nah, there's some cool stuff. So they got custom Booker stuff coming, which is like really the colors that you're wanting to throw that you can't get your hands on. That freaking Black Ice is money. I'm excited about that. Another thing that was stuff in the works as far as stuff that's coming up, and it's like you ain't gotta have it if you can catch fish without it, but damn is it cool to have fun stuff. The freaking Boggs Mohawks
that came in today.
Yeah,
Boggs custom tackle,
got that.
Yeah, it's like a 12-inch soft plastic swim bait. It's got four tails, like three shooting out of the back and then one in the tail. Do you have any of those, Steve?
I do not.
I have not thrown it yet. It just came in today. I mean, go figure, but
I will.
I will, too. That thing is cool. It's runs at like 5-6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got it's not like a regular bulldog, which is going to get achieved greater depths quicker. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. It looks different. We'll get one. I'll get my hands on one here this week and report back on what's going on there. I mean, they're super cool.
Very cool.
You know, it's a different presentation. We're always talking rubber, and it's always neat to just see something that's a different take on thing. I'll tell you this, dude, and I freaking just got them, what, a week ago on those assault eels. That's yeah. Cool. Those things are cool. Oh yeah. Shit, are they cool? Uh-huh. Like I told Jay, and this is like that. Me and Jay talk. Well, we talk usually twice a day, something like that.
Yeah.
We've been dating for a while. We keep up with one another. But you know, I see a hunk of rubber, and I go, "Is it going to be different? These things are cool." You know,
toothy tough baits. Yeah,
yeah, those are cool. And that's been interesting. So we actually got no spoiler alert here. Got a really nice fish on one of those already.
Mm-hmm.
Got it for the show. It'll be on there and all that stuff. But that thing is cool. Super stoked about those. They're just a neat addition. So a lot of cool, fun stuff. But, you know, whatever. Jackal Dunkles in stock now. Got grenades. I don't know. I'm just nerding out on baits because I love just talking about baits, obviously. But
you got some more cool stuff coming too.
I know
that you don't know about. Yep.
I don't. Ooh.
Top secret.
Top secret. Oh, I know what it is.
Jim doesn't even know.
Jim doesn't even know. Freaking Jay just bought some stuff and didn't tell anybody.
I'm not
anybody.
Even gonna tell him. I'm just gonna put him on the website.
Freaking, and it's not even a musky bait. We're selling baseball cards now, folks. I don't know. That's cool stuff going on there. Anyway, Jay caught the biggest fish of my life this week.
That's right. Okay, please tell. Okay. Tell me more.
Are you ready? Drum roll.
Yeah.
I caught a 60-incher.
Boom.
But it was a sturgeon.
Bottom feeder.
How Lord. Slow? Fishing with Stephen Paul. Retarded. So how slow? Are you creeping baits on the bottom for a sturgeon to eat it?
You got to give them time to take it in. Boom.
You're sitting there. You talk about creeping, and you go, I'm in a log. And I'm reeling. I'm like, no, that's stupid. Oh, and I'm creeping along here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually using a funky little setup that involved EBS. So more on that later. Who knows?
Okay.
And I'm reeling, and I'm crawling bottom with a bait. Just the slowest, just creepy, crawly, worst conditions you've ever seen presentation. Bottom contact and pause. Sort of bassy. You know how you do like bass stuff? You bottom bounce and give it a rest? Bottom bouncing. I'm trying to kick up mud, trying to emulate that feeding panfish kind of deal.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I just feel the line just sort of goes, and it doesn't go fast. It's like sort of picks out a little bit. And I went, what? What? And I reeled down and I set the hook and nothing moved, right? Stuck. And then that rod goes thunk, 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 thunk. And it is just pulsating. And I was like, this is not a muskie. And we end up freaking wrenching in a 60-inch sturgeon. I know it's not a big sturgeon for up there. For down here, it's kind of unheard of.
Mm-mm.
And it was ridiculous, dude. Ridiculous. Have you ever caught a sturgeon?
No, I don't think I have.
I always
I don't think so.
I've always been on my list.
How long after you had that thing hooked before it started doing power runs? Or, I mean, when did you really know?
After I'd eaten my second sandwich and I put it in a client's hands.
So was it like 5 minutes to get that thing in the boat? Or
I don't know. We've got the – what's cool is I got a couple nice ones after that. So we got I saved it all for Muskie Shop TV. We'll have to look and see. It's a wild –
bonus fish episode.
Well, yeah, what a neat fish. And who knows? I mean, I've been debating back and forth of like, was it just like sucking something off the bottom? And, you know, they don't eat artificials. And it was just one of these deals of like, you couldn't replicate it a billion times over. It was so strange. And you're going.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, it was just like dinosaur action. And I, there was like one time in the middle of the fight where I just saw it streak by and I went, it might be just a Gondo ski. You know what I'm saying? Cause like the sturgeon I've heard caught down here are little dinky things. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was just prehistoric. It's a neat fish. I've never fooled with one. I've never, you know what I'm saying? But it was cool. Yeah. It was a neat, like, if when it comes to bycatch, I guess this is the bycatch episode, but that was neat. Just plain nice. Old fish are just neat, Jay. Mm-hmm. Fish, welcome to the Fish Are Neat podcast. No, that was crazy. Now, the one thing I'll say is this. I have no questions regarding my shield rod anymore.
That thing was doubled over.
It was goofy.
Cool.
I've caught a lot of big fish on those, but that was just, man, made me question. I was like, what am I doing with my life? I could, you know, if there's a ton of these, that might be fun. But it was something.
Yeah, something. Nice.
Yeah. What do you do?
Yeah, I'm just thinking. It's like, I don't think I've ever caught one. I know I've caught paddlefish, snagged accidentally paddlefish, mm-hmm. and it's just like, that's a torquey, yeah, crazy prehistoric deal too, but not a big sturgeon. Oh, that'd be fun.
Well, oh well. What do you do? I'll never do that again. You know, trash, trash fish. Cut it off.
Bottom feeder.
Trash bottom feeder. Yeah, here I'm talking about trash fish. Anyway, that's the news from Lake Wobegon. The ice mm-hmm. is almost gone. We got spinning rods for the misses. So get it in there, Jay. Let's do.
We'll have a lot of in-store specials next week. If you're up in the area, going out for a walleye opener, stop on by.
Yeah, well, let's do some Q&A. What do you say? Are you up for
it? Let's do it. Absolutely.
Are you there, big man? Hold on, I need to drink some Pepsi here.
Mm-hmm.
Jay went outside the day. It was 50. It's glorious.
What's that?
I said Jay went outside today and it was 50. It was glorious.
Yeah, I sent you a picture of outside. Yeah, it's still 50 degrees out. Woo! Melting ice, baby.
Big excitement. That's called 40 seconds of dead air. Alex. I'm Alex from West by God, Virginia. Sorry, I didn't get the context here.
There you go.
I was wondering, what is the best suspending crankbait, and how and when would you use it? Ooh, suspending Ooh. Crankbait.
Yes.
I'll tell you, I'm all over triple Ds.
Oh, yeah. I had two other ones in mind, but yeah, please tell me more. Okay,
so triple D, I actually, be honest with you, that's one of the few things. I am the guy where I'm like, I throw my extra heavy shield rod all the time. Like, that's mm-hmm. all I throw is an extra heavy shield rod. I do like a whippier rod with those because it's like a glidey, twitchy, jerky kind of thing, right? What's the, goodness gracious.
What's the shallow version of that one?
And everybody that's listening going, yeah, you idiot. Double. There you go. Right,
so you know what triple D stands for, don't you, Steve?
Deep diving dunkle.
Dynamic deep diver.
Dunkle, dunkle, dunkle.
Triple dunkle, baby.
Triple dunkle.
Woo! America,
you got dunkled on. I'm sorry, wow. Man, I am delusional today.
It's funny. Out in the sun too long. Yeah, go ahead.
But, however, mm-hmm. the rejoinder to that would be, that had been my go-to for a while, and I got hip with the old Rachel.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Which is a Herbeck in Maine has sort of worked on and sort of did something similar there but made it better. And a lot of
when
people
when those two minds get together, amazing things happen.
It's a dunkle.
It is. You know what's another great one?
Eh.
Depth Raider, straight, suspending model, Joe Booker tackle. That thing is awesome.
Oh, the freaking where they put the weird eyes on them. Yes.
Suspending Depth Raider. Uh-huh. Love it.
Now, the trick there, I've been down that rabbit hole a few times. I take those and I actually take the rear hook off. This is a crime against humanity here. Don't do this at home and then say you broke the bait. Take your old hacksaw. Okay, you ready, Jay? You ready for this?
I did this like 18 years ago, right. But yeah, go ahead.
Take your hacksaw and you cut the back hook hanger off. Don't put a bunch of pressure on it. You'll crack the bait. They're not meant to be hacksawed on. And glue your big Kalins on the back. Now you got a soft tail suspending jerk bait crankbait.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
They work too.
They do.
Yep.
There's your money. That's one of my deals where in the same fashion I've talked about rubber banding the baits together. Like with those, I will put rubber bands on the suspending DRs. You know the one that's like the purple tiger?
Yeah.
I have a couple. I'm looking at one on the wall where I've done that, and I cut the freaking stupid ring off the back, glued the tail on it, and I just rubber band the hooks to the thing. It's a killer bait. And that's to keep it from, like, if you're trying to work it like a glide bait down there at depth, you'll get hook fouling on the leader sometime. It'll spin around and sort of like if you let it hang too long. So the rubber bands are to keep it from hook fouling, and it glides a little bit better. But yeah, dude, that's sort of a sleeper that's been forgotten is the suspending depth rater. Good bait. What else you got? You got something else?
Well, the Cisco Kid 1800, a lot of them suspend. Or just about dead. I've got a couple of them.
Or is it just the magic of the or luck of the
They're
draw?
They're supposed to have a slow float to them.
Mm.
But if you're lucky enough to get one that suspends, they got a slow rise anyway out of the box, most of them. But that would be could be very, very, very easily modified. And yeah, that was I got a beauty. Used to roach roll that thing and. Quite effective. Got a good wobble. Got a great wobble at slow speeds too.
I'm trying to think of other baits that are like suspending. Now,
yeah, there's not a lot.
But the thing is this, you said with the DRs, I've fooled with a ton of the baby DRs and made them suspend. Right?
Okay.
So one thing I'll say is this is like, and this guy's from West by God, okay? So those fish there are not Wisconsin fish. They are a pain in the ass. West Virginia fish are, like, if you're from West Virginia, you just heard me say that. West Virginia fish are a pain in the ass. You know it. I know it. They're hard, period.
The being finicky.
Finicky, and there's too much to eat. And, like, southern fish, that's the one thing I'll say is this. Southern musky fishermen are pretty well rounded because they got to be, or they're not going to see anything. Just we'll leave it at that. But you got to try all kinds of crap. Always tinkering, always trying to do stuff.
Right. So you're taking a baby straight depth rater and somehow you're turning, how are you modifying that to get it to suspend?
Plumber's tape, wrapping around it. Yeah. Okay. Whether it be plumber's tape, there used to be those suspend dots. It takes a bunch of those, but whatever it takes to get these baits to be negative and neutral, or not negative, I just said negative and neutral, like the bait was a fish, but to be neutrally buoyant.
Mm-hmm.
The reason, like the baby DRs for that, and it could be any, like you could do this with any sort of straight crank. You don't want to try to get a suspending jointed crank. It doesn't make a lot of sense because you want to be able to pop it and make it do weird stuff. Is if those fish are holding at depth and they're suspending down there, you need that kind of neutral buoyancy to get them to eat. Sometimes smaller is better. Right? So, you know,
I'm wrapping my head around that. I agree. Yeah.
Right?
That,
which
that
is
makes
like,
sense.
Which is, so let's say, hold on, I'm going to kick my shoes off, Jay. You ready?
Ugh.
There's one. There's two of the custom-made Stephen Paul Dinosaur Chuck Taylors. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Have you seen those yet? Jody had them made for me. They're amazing.
Whatever.
What? I got it. You know what? I might not be the handsomest guy in the game, but I got a hell of a shoe game. Anywho, so.
Yeah, you do.
I do.
I'll give you that.
I have a freaking strong shoe game. Oh, man. Yet I just got some custom chucks in. I freaking got these Vans flats. You're gonna see them on the boat. They're freaking obnoxious pink flowers. It's amazing. Anyway, So if I'm looking for a suspending thing where I'm going, okay, these fish are being turds.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller is better, right? Easier to weight down, but getting that suspendo thing. So I have done the same thing with baby DRs, baby depth raters, the little guys. Put the tail on the back, right? A little ribbon tail is what I prefer. And what I do with those is I get those off of bass worms, right? So I get the tail off of a bass worm. I glue it on the back of a baby depth raider. So I've got two hooks on the thing. And I put more weight on it and more weight on it. Start incrementally until I can reel it down and it doesn't pop up, right? And you reel it down, twitch, 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 and let that thing sit. Right? 1 1,000, 2 1,000, 3 1,000, 4 1,000. Move it again. Repeat. That is for some very, very finicky, negative, neutral fish, more negative than anything, right? The same philosophy applies from, and it's not just us, anybody you've ever heard talk about gliders, what do they say about gliders, Jay?
What do they say about gliders?
Hang time.
Well, that's what you say about gliders. Well, I do too.
Well, and everyone.
I hope so. I hope so, because, you need to do that.
Well,
sure.
I'm just saying, you talk to Pete, you talk to Joe, you talk to Mr.
Right, right.
Mr. Glide Gliderson from Glide Bait and
Aficionado.
Florida. Yes. That's, do you subscribe to that? Glide Bait Aficionado. anywho.
But, you're right on.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just like...
Yeah.
And you got my brain going here because this is the kind of crap I do all the time. So let's say, and I had this about 2 years ago, I could move them on 6-inch phantoms. That was it. Right? That was the name of the game. And I could see them, but I couldn't catch them.
Okay.
And after a couple of days of that shit, you go, what am I doing wrong? And I'm trying everything.
What do I need to do right?
What I need to do right. Okay. They're going to follow that size. They're going to respond to that action, but they won't eat it. Mm-hmm. I'm dead sticking them by the boat. I'm jerking it around the boat. I'm freaking screaming at them, right? I'm crying at the boat ramp. It doesn't matter. They wouldn't eat
it. Yeah, you're doing different stuff on your figure eight.
Yeah,
it's everything. Like, okay, I'm going to try to trigger him. He's still there. Oh,
right.
God.
And when we're down to freaking 6-inch soft-tail phantoms, or a mini tap dancer, there's not much more. And that's where the baby depth raider suspending with a little bit of a tail on it came from, because I went, okay, let's just try it. Tap, tap, trying to get a side to side, trying to get a side to side, side to side, side to side, side to side, stop. Absolute suspended stop. Boom. And it eats it. Similar action. I mean, a little 6-inch phantom does not walk side to side very far. It's underwhelming, right? I had a guy tell me one time, he said, they look like a fluke, like a bass fluke in the water. And they do.
Yeah, right.
So we're trying to kick it side to side. And it was a matter of instead of the bait falling or the bait rising, if it sits perfectly still, it get hammered. So those are not my favorite kind of bites, Jay. I'll tell you that much. It's like, if it's that much of a pain, it's awful, but you got to get creative. You know, the same could be applied, though. Just about, you could take just about any bait and augment it to do that suspendy stuff.
Well, I like what you said earlier about don't try it with a jointed crankbait. It needs to be a straight crankbait. And I mean, I totally see that. That's what you got to go for. What you also said about going with the larger baits, trying to turn them into a suspending bait. And if you're putting something temporary on the bait, as opposed to like injecting it with lead or something like that, where it's just like, if you overdo it, you crack it, you can't seal it right, you just ruined it. Yeah, if you apply something physically on the outside of the bait that you can remove if you don't like it, That's ideal.
Well,
or maybe, you know, just take, you know, some of those Dipsy sinkers that have the the brass loops on there, you know, and put a half ounce on there and just clip it to the front hook hanger. See what it does with a half ounce. And then go with something fixed to the body.
Well, and I mean,
if it requires a half ounce, and yeah,
I mean, and if it becomes a thing, if it's working, then take, I mean, this is earmuffs here, okay, folks. If you got a bait and you're like, I want to make it suspend, and you know how much lead, so you take your lead and you play with it, and you go, okay, I've got a depth rater and I want it to do this, or I got a lunge and I want it to do this. Drill a hole in it, put BBs in it the same way, and then JB weld over it. There you go. And it's in there. It's just plastic. You know what I'm saying? Now, that will void your manufacturer's warranty. I promise you that. But, you know, you can, if it's something that becomes a permanent fixture, you know, I haven't rocked that baby depth rater suspending thing. I haven't needed to in a while, but I've got two of them. I'm looking at on the wall with the small ones where they're ready to go. I don't have them in the boat, but if I see like six of these things follow in behind like a tiny little glide bait and they just won't eat it at all, I'm going to go, okay, I need those. So I got them rigged up and ready to rock and roll in that regard. Anyway, wow. It's the Suspending Crankbait Podcast, brought to you by Breaking Baits and Tearing Them Apart.
Well, if there's ever a time to try a presentation like that, it would be right now, early in the season for most folks around the country, you know, colder water period.
Man. All right, Jason, I'm trying to up my trolling game this year. How do you run planer boards? I've never ran them before. It's new to me. How much line do you use? How do you fight a fish with planer boards? And what are the best planer boards for musky fishing? Lot to unpack there. Start with the boards. So I run a set called the Blade. Yeah. I think we got on this tip like last week or something.
A little bit a while ago. Yeah.
So there's a dude that makes custom planer boards. We have harangued him. Did you get a hold of him, Jay?
Yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay. And we didn't talk about this. What's going on there?
I don't know when they're coming in, but he is going to produce some for us.
So, yep. Good.
Actually, Jim talked to him, so okay, I haven't. Yep.
Got a few. Okay, so these boards are like aluminum and foam, and they're different from any board you've ever seen, and they're freaking so easy, you can do them by yourself.
Cool.
And those are super cool. I've been running those. They're ridiculous. So you clip it on your line. It has like a Scotty clip style, kind of little Scotty clip on there, and you put your line in the back, and the line holder is literally just a fixture where you slide the line in and it slides right out, and that's about the end of it. So those are called the Blade. I guess we're getting them. So more on that later. Thanks for keep. I'm out of the loop, folks, but they're cool. I have taken my 14-inch Jake and put it behind this trolling board. You can run like anything. They won't bog down. There's some good math going on there, is what I'll say. So those rock. That's the planer board I used. You got churches, which are like, those are working because it's like forcing out there, and there's like some styrofoam and stuff. I mean, as far as like all the other boards I've seen are very similar, where it's flat sided, it's actual board, and they're using like styrofoam as flotation. Yep. And so once you understand what a planer board does, it literally just like takes the bait away from your boat. So you're spreading your lines further, or you're getting them away from the prop wash and the noise of the boat sometimes for fish that are negative or neutral. So to unpack the rest of that, how do you run them? So let's say we're going to run four lines, and we're going to run two planer boards and two typical flat lines. You want your planer boards ahead of your other lines in the boat, right? So they'll run outside, if that makes any sense. So you would put your non-planer board line in back at the back by the engine and have your planer board lines in front of that so they can spread out and run beside the boat. How much line is going to be determined of how much you're trying to, how depth, you know, how deep you're trying to go. So like, we were just talking like all these suspended crankbaits or regular crankbaits. Let's take a typical, like a super common, what, grandma. What's a 9-inch grandma?
A 9-inch grandma. Okay. Right.
Super common. So I'm going to get on my Muskie 360 app. Shameless promotion. I'm going to get the app. I'm going to look at a grandma, and it's going to say 22 feet of line equals X amount of depth. I'm going to clip my planer board on at 22 feet. Right? So where the planer board is becomes the new rod tip. Right? It's simple, but once you think about it, oh, yeah, now it makes sense. Duh. So your board is at the surface. The amount of line you have behind the board will dictate the running depth in conjunction with speed. So if you need 10 feet to hit your target depth, you put it 10 feet behind where you clipped it on and you got your running depth. So the amount of line behind the board is going to dictate running depth. How much line you feed out will dictate how far the board gets from the boat. The reason I was running blades is because I had a problem with big planer boards where if you're going to 4 miles an hour and stuff like that, they're going to start lagging behind the boat. The blade planer boards ride pretty even, right? So you're not getting, the faster you go, the more force there is on planer boards. So they get pulled behind the boat. So that's why you guys don't see a lot of faster trolling using planer boards because they start becoming a mess.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you just think of your planer board that. So it's the new rod tip. So let's say me and Jay are trolling and Jay's driving the boat and he's telling me to rig the rods and he goes, I need that line out at 15 feet on the planer board. So I'm going to get my clicker and I'm going to clicker out 15 feet and then put the board on. So I know exactly where I'm clipping on. The board becomes that stopping point, and then everything's dictated there. Other than that, it's a pretty simple process. Regardless of what kind of planer board, you can use a lot of them for, you know, if single line stuff, guys that don't fish multi-rod situations, you can have like much cleaner passes using a planer board. Like say Jay goes out and he could run one board up an edge where you've got the appropriate presentation depth, but you're not worried about banging your boat, you know, or you're fishing the river, or you're fishing something that's rocky. You can use the line from the planer board, feed that thing out there and keep you 30 feet off the bank. So you're not worried about hitting stuff, which is a neat way to doing things.
Yeah.
So, cause that's one thing. A lot of guys like in single rod states, they never think about planers just as a tool. It's just popping in my head. I've actually seen, dude, the salmon guys, you know, back in the day, I don't know if they still do it. Used to use planer boards on river bank fishing and feed them out and feed baits out that way. But like I said, the blade, there's not a bad planer board. If you're looking for like something that's really cool and versatile, I like that. Jay, you like what you fish? Have you fished the churches at all?
Offshores.
Offshores. So everything comes with a give and take. Like I said, the blades, I run those just cause I can pull anything on them and I don't have to think about them. They're super easy. So more on that later. We'll talk about it after a bit. I'm sure Christian might sound like a stupid question. There's no stupid questions, Jay.
Not at all.
Well, there are stupid questions, but this is not one of them. He says, might sound like a stupid question, but what is a brake line and how do you find them? Tell Jay to beware of Elmer.
So, I keep that in mind.
Folks, I think everyone should beware of Elmer. So, dude, that's the new sign. Please put one in the store door tomorrow.
It's like, just, like beware of dog.
Yeah, but beware of different. Elmer. It just says beware of Elmer. People are like, what? That's it. He's just in there. Just gritting his teeth at people.
You wouldn't even believe his fan club.
The Elmer fan club runs deep.
It does, man.
That is. Just wait for the Muskie Shop Bash. July 17th, Minocqua, Wisconsin. 16th. July 16th, Minocqua, Wisconsin. We're going to have a Quest for Titan movie poster signing with Elmer Jensen. We're going to print off some wonderful movie posters. Elmer will be there on the red carpet signing posters, possibly in costume from the movie. If we can, the Smithsonian has it currently on loan, and we're going to see if we can get it back. You know, Library of Congress wants their hands on it, but we'll see if we can't get him in his wonderful space helmet signing some posters.
Well, the space helmet we have, it's actually Jim's. It's a colander. He uses it for spaghetti every night.
Spaghetti every night. That's all. You're insinuating that's all he eats.
I made that up.
Every meal. Jim, the big spaghetti steward. So, folks, he's eating spaghetti every meal for 38 years. I don't know. It'd be funny. Would you die if you ate spaghetti for every meal?
Yeah, I think so.
I think you would. I think, unless you added other stuff. Folks, write in if you've eaten. Okay. That fifth Pepsi just hit me, Jay. I'm sorry.
Steve, you got to get your vegetables in there.
You got to get your vegetables. You know, you can eat spaghetti for every meal, but you got to throw a turnip in there every now and again, guys.
Turnip.
Okay.
But anyway, what were we talking about?
Brake lines. So, Jay.
Brake lines, yes.
I'm going to go use the little angler's room while you explain what brake lines are. I have 45 seconds. Go!
A brake line. I'm not sure if he was asking about brake lines in trolling, but if you look at your mapping on your boat, let's say you have a physical map, it's going to have a distinct brake line of a greater depth where the lines are going to be closer together. And where that first set of lines, where it really starts to get narrow, the lines, that is, would be considered a brake line. Quite often, like 5 to 15 feet, that's where you want to target. If you've got, on the top side of that, if you've got weeds or rock or some type of really good cover, that brake line is probably more productive than one that's got a barren top edge. So I guess that's
what
I'd explain
it.
I was talking about the lines tighter together on the map, and you know where it first starts getting, you know, where you have a sharper brake, that'll be the first brake line. And yep, you got exaggerated turns in it, all the more better. And if you got something on top, you know, with good cover, then you got a sweet spot.
There you go. So just, we you know, when you're talking structure, Jay, I'm getting back in the game here, folks. I'm working on a mosquito bite. I had to visit the little angler's room, and I'm back. Anywho, one thing, and I don't know if you said this already, Jay, but I'm just guessing you didn't. If you really want to understand what just a simple brake line is look at a map, and you're going to see the black squiggly lines like Jay has said, right? And look at one line and the one that's adjacent from it, right? And let's say one line says 10 and the other one says 11. Those lines on the map are brake lines, and the space in between is how much there is a change in depth between those two lines. Did you already say that, Jay?
Pretty much.
Pretty much. In other words, moving on! Just reiterating. That's what we do on here. Bob! Say Bob, Jay.
Talk to me, Bobby.
Bob! I'm going to be trolling smaller deep diving crankbaits this coming early to mid-summer. I will sometimes need to get these baits pretty deep, and since they are sensitive to line diameter, I will need to use lighter line to get them down. What is the minimum line weight you would use for trolling for muskies in open water where no contact with cover or bottom is expected? For reference, I typically use Cortland Master Braid, the Ranger of fishing lines. Dang!
50.
Bob, I know which Bob this is. He got a big promotion there at the Kmart, and he moved up to Cortland. I am a mess. I'm sorry. I'm having fun.
Wow.
It's Bob. It's Bob that we met at the bash.
Oh,
came
okay.
Out for the live podcast. He's cool. I like Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bobbo. Another more points for the board there, Bobbo. Cortland, here's my thing. And Jay, and I'm not, this is just talk, folks. I don't know this to be a fact. Is there water absorption with Cortland still?
I don't consider it an issue. There's different levels of that with different line.
Right.
I use Master Braid Cortland, and I use other line. And
you what? You, huh?
Master Braid. Cortland, Master Braid. He was talking about minimum. One thing with Cortland is it's a little bit higher diameter versus most other lines. It's just in their weave or their blend or however they manufacture that. But I would say 50. I wouldn't personally go lighter than that on anything, not in a true musky setup.
Here's the thing. If we're getting into ninja mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was trolling some 20-pound mono this winter, not going to lie. Okay? I got in a position where I needed to get small baits deep, and that was my bite. Now, that is, with great power comes great responsibility. Okay? I think that was from Spoder Man. Ever seen that movie, Spoder Man?
No.
Sorry, Jay. You've put up with me for a few years now, folks. Spoder Man. Anyway, you don't want to play stupid games and win stupid prizes and hurt fish, right? You can catch a muskie on anything. I mean, you could go up to the Walleye Opener Extravaganza and buy a spinning rod with 10-pound test and catch a muskie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you better know what you're doing. And you got to play them light. The propensity for us to have 80-pound braid is a new deal, right? I spent a lot of my formative years throwing 30-pound Berkeley big game mono. It's only 30-pound test. We couldn't hook a fish for shit, but we landed the ones that ate the bait enough for us to accidentally hook them because we had no hook setting power. With that being said, so it's not a tensile strength of that. I just worry about diameter and running depth, right? So the wider the diameter of your line is, becomes cumulative surface area, right? So if you think, let's take 100 feet of line and it's whatever, 1 millimeter, and the next line of this comparable is 1.2, we extrapolate that over 100 feet. Now your surface area is greater and those baits are running higher, right? So water creates friction. The more surface area, the higher it runs. I don't think if you're like dead set, you're running like what I would call like a big walleye crank or something of that nature, right? You're running 30-pound multi-strand and you're running 30-pound braid, you can do it. But then it becomes appropriate drag settings and playing the fish appropriately. Right? The whole move to 80-pound this, really heavy rods, is land the fish and land them quick. Because it minimizes the stress on the fish and yada, yada, yada. Right? Catch them on anything. So, I don't think it's an ethical conversation. I think it's a matter of, do you feel comfortable that you can quickly and safely land a fish on 30-pound setup, or you can land it on a 40-pound? Heck, 55-pound braid's pretty thin, right?
Yeah.
So if you're targeting in a specific manner, use the biggest setup that you can get away with that is the easiest for you to use, right? So don't go out in the first weekend of musky fishing and go, I'm going to troll 10-pound mono and freaking a headlock. You know, that's going to end badly. But have your setup that it's going to hit what you need to do. It's going to hit the areas you need to hit as heavily gunned as you can get away with, that it makes your presentation work and it makes it easy. You know, because, I mean, that would be my take. I don't know, Jay.
Well, yeah, I mean, Yeah, I mean, 80-pound, you know, braided line, today's lines, is 20-pound mono equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
Roughly, they're all the same. They're right in that ballpark. So,
well, it's, I'll say this.
It's not saying you're buying that stuff to, you know, go thinner than that. You run the risk of any kind of backlash or overrun. It's going to be a nightmare with the real thin stuff, too.
Well, the thin stuff, but the thing I'll say is
snap.
Mono runs deeper than braided because of a smoother surface.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the thing, I, you know what? I'm thinking out loud. I love solving these problems because this is what I'm doing on the boat all the time. Let's say, okay, so he needs to get pretty deep. Run wire. Bob.
Yeah.
Get a wire.
That's what they used to do. Yeah.
Get a wire set up. Right? You get this little, you know, those things like, Jay, when you shut a door and this little springy thing behind the door, doing, and you flip them when you're a kid. What are those tips called on a rod? Little spring tip for a wire setup. It's been a...
Oh, yeah.
What's the name of that? I got to look it up.
It's an ice fishing thing. Yeah. Spring bobber.
Is it on the rod?
Well, that's what an ice fishing rod would have, a spring bobber on the end. Yeah, it's a bite indicator is what it is.
No, it's the tip of the rod to keep it from messing up.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Twilly tip.
Willy tip. Okay.
Twilly tip, right? And so you can put these freaking things on like your wire rods, right? So you could run straight wire line. Now, okay, a couple things when it comes to straight wire, if I can remember here. We used to run those on these red pins all the time as a kid. I can't say I still run wire. I've ran wire in recent memory, if recent memory's 5 years. You put this little tip on your rod, and it's got this spring, and it keeps things in line. It keeps them from being messed up. If you're ever running wire line, never take your clicker off, because that stuff will go doink, and you've got a backlash of wire, and it is bad. But there's something about wire line. There's a hum, and you can hear it. It's a, and it translates to the baits. And a lot of times you're trolling, like, let's say you're trolling five deep and you got a wire out there. You'll notice that the wire starts getting hit and you're going, that's the only rod that's going to work all day. If I was in a position where I had to consistently troll small stuff at depth, wire's going to be the ticket. That's probably the best thing, because you've got a really heavy medium to fish with, where you're not worried about conservation, but you're hitting the depths. I don't know. That's a whole other rabbit hole. This is like the rabbit hole podcast for me.
Is it because I've had the
Pepsis, or is it just because the questions? I don't know.
I've never seen that. I mean, and some people have these rod setups back in the day. They had like rollers instead of eyelets, you know?
Well, I mean, those are like tuna freaking guides.
I was just going to say, saltwater deal.
Flat out. We used to go to the local Kmart, second Kmart reference in the podcast. Thank you very much. Mm. Do you remember, let's take a little sidebar, Jay. Are you ready?
Blue light special.
Did you ever eat at a Kmart cafe?
Nope.
They used to have a restaurant in Kmart's. It was disgusting. Anyway, they would have like, can you imagine going to your local Kmart and you're like, I'm going in here and I'm going to buy a really ugly shirt and a Bob Seger record and I'm going to eat liver and onions.
And I'm hoping to buy a really bad sandwich.
Yeah. Well, they had the liver and onions. So it doesn't get
worse. Is this in West Virginia?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
It was a rough go of things as a child. Anyway.
Rough childhood.
Abuse. I remember buying like ugly sticks, like these whippy, horrible, inexpensive rods just for that. So you wanted like a glass rod and you put these twilly freaking tips on them and all this crap. It's a different setup, but it's cool, man. Okay. And it works. And it's sort of like one of those techniques and tactical presentations, for lack of a better terminology, that it will still work. And now I talk about it, I think I'm going to get on the internet and buy some stuff here for a little bit so we can do something with it. Connor, I know this is a wide open question. All of them are wide open questions tonight, but I know this is a wide open question. But if you had to pick between, when you have to pick between baits like Dive and Rise versus Cranks or Rubber and Glides, how do you know what to use? Do you just guess or you try stuff out? What determines a bait selection? Wow. Coming with
he was kind of talking between Dive, Rise, and Glide
I think he's just talking about like, okay, why would you grab like a Dive and Rise versus a Crank, or and he says Rubber versus Glides, or
well, yeah. I like the question specifically, you know, Dive, Rise versus Glide. You know, it's like you've determined it's kind of a tough bite, you know, negative neutral kind of situation, and it's just like, am I going to run a Dive, Rise Titan? Am I going to run a Phantom?
Right.
You would go with the Phantom.
Me?
You're a glide bait guy, but if being Mr. Titan, you know, you'd probably actually be using that too. But I'm just saying, yeah, overall, you know, what would determine specifically in this situation, two different types of, you know, slow erratic jerk baits, which one, you know, makes more sense to go with in a certain case.
Okay. I'm looking at it. If you're looking at it in that sense, I'm looking at it as a little bit more overarching. How do you pick a bait, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which we're getting the same answer here. But first of all, I want to be competent with all the baits, right? So the kiss of death of musky fishing is the terminology, confidence bait. That's my confidence bait.
Yeah.
Well, I hope this is your confidence conditions. Hello. So if I'm posed with this situation, I got to find out what they're hitting. At that point, you have no pattern. If you're just going between baits, right?
Yep. You have none. Right.
None. So blades top water, right? Cover the same turf, Dive and Rise, Glides, Rubber. You know, we're about there. I want to have them all out, and I want to go, what am I going to do, and when am I going to apply these? So if I have no pattern, I'm going to pick between baits. It's not an arbitrary, like, I stick my finger up in the air, and I lick my finger, I stick up in the air, and I go, it's a glide bait day. Right? That's not the scenario. The scenario is I'm competently working through all the possible tools until I find one that works, right? So to really know what baits to use, you need to be competent with all of them, and you need to be confident in patterning, right? So let's say it is fall and it is Wisconsin and it is high bright sun and it is a cold front, right? I'm still thinking edges. I'm still thinking shoreline cover like weeds. What are they going to move on? I'm not going to start with the blades in the top water. I'm probably going to start with my Phantom, right? And start there. So there's literally, you know, like those circles, Jay, like back in the day when we're kids, it'll be like calculation circles of like X plus Z and D and Q, and you get this answer and you turn these little plastic wheels and it'll give you a calculation.
Okay.
Right. You know what I'm talking about? Or like tools. Like, there needs to be something for, like, a musky choice kind of thing where if conditions look like shit, I'm not starting with hot baits, right? So I'm going to start with the worst of the worst, and if that doesn't work, I might speed it up. So you need to assess what's going on conditionally, right? So this Wisconsin cold front in the fall is one thing, or I step out on the frickin' deck of the boat, and I got low-hanging clouds, and it's July. We're going to start with the bucktails in the top water, and we're going to go downhill from there, right? So you're either working uphill from sluggishly slow to hot, or we're working downhill from hot down, or at some starting point, right? So we start at rubber, and we work away from that. We need to have our selection of baits, and we go big rubber, small rubber, big glide, small glide, Dive and Rise, and it's weird. Dive and Rise size really doesn't matter. That's the weirdest thing. Me and Herbeck have talked about it here recently. He's like, Dive and Rise.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Yeah,
like Dive and Rise is just like, you don't hear a lot of like, well, let's downsize. I mean, they make the tiny little Civics, but dude, that same fish will eat a Titan or a freaking bobby bait. Right. Diving rights is odd.
With the glide baits, it's all
but it's all about size.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get your rubber and your glides and your different size of these things, and you sort of competently work through those in a rotation. It's never a thing where I go, boom, it's this bait or nothing. That's a bad move, because now you've hamstrung yourself into a very narrow level of success. So I want to have not confidence baits, but I have a selection of baits that are appropriate for what I'm reading conditionally. Right. And I rotate through those until something works. Right. And so the next selection would be, let's say that I'm throwing my, and it's just a go-to bait, you know, confidence bait, dare I say. But we've talked about Phantoms a lot. 6-inch Phantom. It's a money bait. Okay, I'm working it and I'm doing it right. Bam, 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 pause. Ding, 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 dong, pause. But I see a fish way below it. Mm-hmm. And he comes in and he just turns off before I do anything by it. Well, if I see the deep fish below the glide bait and he never came up, I go, rubber. Get down where they're at.
Yeah.
Right? So my bait selection is going to be based off on follows or lack thereof, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm doing something a bunch and it's not getting any follows, stop doing it, right?
Yep. Lack thereof makes a lot of sense.
Lack thereof is that is musky fishing.
Yeah.
And admitting you don't know what's going on. Because the one thing I can tell you, there's a corollary between musky fishermen and freaking being hard-headed and stupid.
Yeah.
So admitting you're wrong, it's not a strong suit of most people, but you gotta go, okay, this ain't working. But looking at that, but a lot of those decisions can quickly be made, like we said, assessing the conditions. Now, the rejoinder to this entire thing in a bait selection scenario would be the following, which is, okay, let's say we've got the quintessential, it's gonna storm, Jay.
It's coming.
It's coming. It's looking good. But I'm on gin clear water. Well, light level of light penetration still plays. Right? So it's one of these summer storms where it's not pitch black out there, but it's coming. You might need to still consider how far the light is penetrating in the water column for your selection, which might be a tube, which might be rubber, or it's tannic. So, you know, your bait selection is going to be based around making an assessment of weather and water, first and foremost, right? Dead flat, calm, high, bright sun, clear water. Well, we're going to have to get down and dirty, right? Dead flat, calm, high, bright sun, tannic. Man, it still might be bucktails, right? There's some stuff in the Northwoods that's pure coffee. Right. Mm-hmm. The light can't penetrate. So assess the weather, assess the water, assess the conditions, you know, pay attention to don't walk out. And the one thing I'll say is this is a lot of guys will walk out on a Friday and they didn't even look at what was going on with the weather on Thursday. They were just focused on Friday. And they go, well, crap, it was 30 degree temp drop yesterday and we're just now on the uphill swing. So make those assessments. There's not a rock solid like this is the game plan for every selection or every day. Find a starting point that's logical. You've listened to enough podcasts, read enough articles, all this stuff. You can make a logical assessment and start somewhere that makes a modicum of sense and work up or work down, right? Now, a problem a lot of us have is you're by yourself, right? You need to start switching baits and go forecast with this, forecast with that, forecast with the next one and keep going, right? That's why I said you need to be competent with all those presentation styles where you can just seamlessly get going with them, right? And I'd say my biggest hang up and something I've really seen this week is like, I can really get a dude rocking and rolling with bait X, Y, or Z, right?
Mm-hmm.
After an hour. But that's sort of like the, for you guys that are like, podcasters and serious about this stuff is you don't have an hour to get the swing of it. Right? You better be competent. Know your tools. So patterning and finding active fish comes down to knowing your tools. What are they going to do? What are they good at? And it becomes situational. And I'm on a tirade now, and I'm sorry I'm on the tangent, but.
Well, yeah, you can check them off the box more confidently.
Right.
If you know your tools.
You know your tools. So
you move on to the next one. Try to find a pattern.
Right. This does this. This does that. This does this. So, you know, in a more grandiose thing, it's like, okay, I'm fishing a back bay, right, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
Boat setting at 6, and I'm throwing an edge. Well, I might work a glide. I might work a blade. I might work this. But then I pull out and I work a point. Well, it's going to be different tools to effectively work that point than it was to work that back bay. Now, if I'm only good at 2 presentations and I'm not good at suspending crankbaits like we talked about, or I'm not good at rubber, well, I'm not going to be as effective on that point as I was in that back bay when it was blades, top waters, and maybe a shallow crank.
Mm-hmm.
So being effective with all your tools, knowing what they all do, becomes a matter of you're effective on the entire lake, right? So, I mean, that's probably the biggest thing. I'll tell you this, and I'm like, when I get a new bait, right? I look at it in the water. What does it do at rest? What does it do when I don't do anything to it? What does it do when I reel it fast? What does it do when I reel it slow? What can I do with this bait? And if I like it, I buy 50 of them, right? If it doesn't work for me, I move on. And I sort of have those scenarios in my head where I go, okay, this, you know what, a MD smoker shad, right? I need something to get down dirty in the flats. I'm only throwing that bait in like certain areas that make sense. And then I might be throwing a slammer, or I might be throwing this, that, or the other. So knowing where your tools work, knowing how to work your tools, where to apply them is what musky fishing boils down to. So there's not a great answer there other than have an understanding. So with that being said, and I'm just so off the rails here, we talked about and I liked it with the spinning. I brought up like the Rachel from Livingston, right? And the Triple D. They feel different, yep, but they do the same thing in a lot of regard. So you play with a Rachel and you play with a Triple D, you go, which one works the best for you and has the best action? You go, that's the bait I'm throwing. Where a lot of guys will go for like, and I'm trying to articulate as best I can here. They're going for what are they hitting, right? Muskies are never hitting a brand of baits. Hello? Right, Jay? Am I right? Right? You always, people walk into the muskie shop and they go, what are they hitting? And here's Fred Palermo, right? And he tells them they're hitting, you know, they're hitting 7-inch cranes.
Yeah.
Right? But follow
right,
me.
Right, right. He's suggesting a style of bait. You know, but it's not necessarily, no. It's got to be.
Follow me. You know, let me, 2 seconds for a second. Sorry. So let's say 10 people have come in and they've torn them up on 7-inch cranes, right? Muskies do not know the difference between a 7-inch crane and a freaking 7-inch slammer or a Rapala FJ or an AC Shiner, or you name these minnow baits that wobble. What muskies are hitting are a certain size and vibrational profile.
Yeah.
They're not hitting a brand. They're in tune with something that bait is doing. Right? So patterning muskies becomes an understanding of the differences between the baits, right? So when it comes to crankbaits, I own, of all the baits that I own, the most crowded variety thereof is crankbaits, right? And so you go, a shad wrap is not a crane bait, whereas a crane bait is not a shallow raider, and it's not a freaking square bill luncheon. So understanding the difference in those and what they excel at and what they're weak at is the ticket. And then you dig in, you go, okay, these conditions and this pattern is starting to open up, because like you could sit there, me and you could go on a boat and I could throw cranes and you could throw 5-inch shallow raters and you might just kill me one day, right? And the next day it might be a reversal of that. So they're tuned in on an action and a size. So that becomes like probably one of the main things of the whole ordeal. And I'm off on a stupid tangent here to the point I called you today, Jay. What did I say we're catching on? Figure eights, right?
On
the boss.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I'm playing with blades. We were literally getting follows on the boss from figure eight, the spinnerbait, right? And they've got a willow leaf on there. When I changed it to the same size blade in chartreuse, we were getting our asses rocked, right? Which is that a collar thing? I think so. And I usually say collar doesn't matter, but today it did, right?
You're saying all you did was swap color of mm-hmm. the rear blade on that. Okay.
Right. Didn't change. So, you know, I'm just sort of spinning here and just talking out loud, if you will. But you go, sometimes it matters between one of you's fishing a slammer and one of you's fishing a crane or whatever it might be. So back to the original question of how do you make a bait selection? There's a lot of factors, right? I was in stained water today. Color mattered. Sue me, you know, sorry. It is what it is. But the chartreuse blade showed up better than the silver, and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's game on like Donkey Kong. But your bait selections need to be based on assessing the situation, assessing the climactic conditions, then secondly looking at the water conditions, and then going from there and find your starting point and work up or work down, and that is it. And then when, like, I'm trying to say this, and I've had too many Pepsis, where I'm working inside that same bait class, which is they'll follow a slammer, but they hit a crane. They'll follow a shallow raider, but they'll hit a slammer. You can find it where it's so dialed in where you go, okay, this is rinse and repeat, and I throw, you know, a 206 crane, and I'm getting to eat every 30 minutes. That's the goal. So anyway, goodness, soapbox, Jay, I'm sorry. hit the snooze button. That was off the rails. Anyway, you ready for this one? What do you got, Jay?
What have I got?
I thought you were going to say something.
No, I was just thinking about what you're talking about. You
Lay
know,
it on it, me. What
it's,
do you
it's
got?
Just like, well, that's the whole thing. You know, it's the bait selection. That is the most critical thing, because, you know,
but
most
intelligent
of the time,
bait selection.
Well, it's how to do it, how to perform well. You know, there's no right and wrong answer, but there's certainly avenues that you can take. There's logic that you could apply to it. I mean, up your odds greatly, and that's just about experience on the water. It's just listening to other people's experience, and you know,
I mean, dude, I've been
two and two together.
I've been on the boat where a dude shows up and he's got a freaking Lakewood monster and he wants to throw everything in it, and it's spring. Well, that makes no sense.
Yeah,
you know, well, I mean, it is what it is. Just apply. Whatever.
Well, you know, part of it too is just eliminating bad lure choices, you know, for that certain, you know, if the fish are flying, you know, and just everything's cooking and on fire, and you're running really slow, deep presentation or something like that, and the fish are high and they're moving fast, you gotta be aware enough to figure out that that's not working and you should be trying, you know,
absolutely,
completely different approach. So. So well, it's all about,
you know, if I had it my way, it would musky fishing in heaven, Jay, it is July in Canada and they're hitting topwater. You know, that's what we all want. The rest of it just sucks. This guy's name is awesome.
No, you ready? No, I think it's cool. I think it's cool because that's what's so amazing about this sport. You know, it's just like there's such a wide variety of cool baits and presentations, and it's just like trying to apply them right.
Dude,
you know?
I mean,
I love it.
You know, I watched today, Jody Mike was on the boat,
mm-hmm.
throwing a little phantom, right? Here comes this fish. And it is just glazed over like a donut. Just didn't want anything to do. It looked.
Bummer.
You know, and I went, well, put this on. Give her a little mini tap dancer, right? I mean, tell me, what's the difference between a freaking the little Phantom? Was it four or whatever? And I mean, put it on here. This thing comes over, haired over like a freaking, it's on fire. And we just laughed. She didn't get it. We were just giggling. So we're like, why did that matter so much? Same speed. It's just the dumbest stuff. I mean, this could be Steve's vent podcast, but whatever. These things are retarded. Fishing for muskies. Retarded. All right. Next up is Dirty Dave. Dirty Dave says, what old school baits do you still throw? Love the podcast. I'm going to honk the horn of my big rig if you read this one on the show. Keep on trucking and fishing. Your friend, Dirty Dave. Oh, my God.
Nice.
Dirty Dave.
That's awesome.
Retarded.
So, old school baits you still throw. Go, Dave.
I don't know. I'm still laughing. Musky fishing retarded. Fishing with JSE is brought to you by the Musky Shop. Fishing with JSE. Retarded.
Oh man. Remember the first take I did that when I was filming those little tiny pike I was catching and doing the first Todd and Dave?
Like, oh, that was funnier now.
Yeah, that was fun. Anyway, yeah.
Did we ever use that?
No, it'll never be seen.
It was, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah.
The release.
So, yeah.
Retarded.
Old school musky baits.
Old school, well, honk your horn. Buddy, I've been out in the sun and I'm on, let me count, one, two,
I've,
three,
I've
four,
seen you throw five, a Post Giant Jackpot.
Six. I'm at 8 Pepsis since we started. Post Giant Jackpot is money. This is just another one for the board there, Bobo.
Yeah.
Post Giant Jackpot, money. Still love it. If you find a good one, it's going to make the whoosh. That's a good one.
Yeah.
And that's not that old school. How old school would we want to go?
Hey, dude. Hog Wobbler.
I was literally about to say. Moldy's
Hog Wobbler. Those things are awesome.
There's a little, I think it's a 4-inch, the little tiny one.
Oh, okay.
And I moved one on that today. Now, my problem was, had that fish hit, I don't know if the bait would have exploded.
The hooks on that are so light wire, so tiny.
Than either of us, that bait. I like the Hog Wobblers. They're cool. You know, and what's old is this point?
Mud Puppy.
Of anything I've never thrown. I have some Mud Puppies, never thrown them.
It's a subtle presentation surface bait.
There's a bait, as far as surface bait, and I know that it might, there's a freaking bait Musky Shop used to have called the Magic Back, which is just a stud, and it might come back. That's a surface bait. I hope it does. I've heard rumblings that would come back. Sort of old school. Stuff that I still throw consistently, though. I don't throw globes. I'm looking at some globes on the wall, and I don't throw globes. Maybe I should. Old. Let me look here. Think what's in the boat. That's my best 60 minutes. I throw some of the, and I'm talking like 1970s, Bill Lewis rattle traps, but I think they're probably the same. They make a floating rattle trap still, Jay?
Oh, those big floating ones? No, I don't think so.
I've got,
yeah,
like,
my buddy's got one of those.
I've got enough to freaking float a boat. Huh. I like those. Those are cool. Oh God. That's the thing. They're like, call it old, like grandmas and Jake's. They're getting up there. The Booker stuff has been around for a while. I mean, as far as genuinely old stuff that I throw, there's nothing that I would say is like completely antiquated. I'll admit that. I got Suix that are old enough to graduate college. I know that
much.
There
you go. Yeah. Right.
Love my Suix. I'm Mr. Titan. Still like my Suix. If I'm trying to get frustrated on the lake, I'll still throw a Suix. Bobbies. I haven't thrown a bobby in a long time.
Bobby's reef hogs. I mean,
reef, but that's a problem. Like when you think about it, I'm thinking out loud. I'm gonna go, do I really like? I could throw like a kick ass Leo, or I could throw a reef hog, and you're like, the suffering is immense.
I've got a ton of old reef hogs. I don't use them.
Creek chub. I still throw creek chubs. Moderate usage on the creek chubs, but I still throw a creek chub every now and again. Geez. That's a cool question, because when you think about it, you sort of phase stuff out and you go, my tackle box in the 1990s looks nothing like my tackle box in 2000, and
I think what he's saying too is stuff that's not in production that's old school. I mean, you start talking about some of these baits like, you know, Jakes and Burt's and Depth Raiders. It's so, they were coming out in the early 90s. I mean, that's old school, but you know, but they're all in still production, so they don't seem old. They're outdated at all because they're not.
The cool thing for me is I've spent years throwing high fins, and guess who brought them back, baby? The Musky Shop.
Yeah,
I've always liked high fins.
The old creeper.
They're killer. You know, I've got French of the May stuff, but I don't know if I'm going to throw that anymore because
too valuable.
No, musky baits aren't valuable. That's the dude. I hate that. I could make this podcast 4 hours long when I go to like valuable musky baits. Think about this, Jay. How valuable is a bait that hasn't caught a fish? What is a musky bait made to do?
No, it depends on who you talk to.
Bullshit. People pay
$200 for a lay lure.
No.
Oh, yeah.
It's made to catch muskies. If it doesn't catch muskies, it ain't worth a shit. Facts.
In your book.
Big true. If not, you're a knickknack collector, and you and your grandma can talk about your musky baits, and she can show you her Hummel collection. This is one that's standing in the snow. Remember Hummels, Jay? They're stupid.
Nope.
Like collecting musky baits. Buddy, collect tools. That's what I'm saying. I'll shut up here in a second, but I'm thinking I think that's about it. He sort of stumped me on that. I don't throw enough old shit. I just simply don't. Don't throw old stuff because it's just... time marches on.
Enough said, right?
I mean, I know it's like he pinned us to the wall because I'm sitting here, we're always talking about these older things, but probably the only thing that I focus on that is older, it's not old, it's not antiquated, are the old Bulldogs and like the China Dogs. That's it. The rest of it's like big, better, you know, best, getting good.
Needs to be rephrased. I don't think he's talking old school. He's talking about unpopular.
Unpopular, vintage.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's just so, you know, the hog wobbler, that was our big thing. I mean, it's just, I throw magic makers. I don't know if that's old. I don't throw them enough, though. And you say this and you go, man, that was like, if podcasts existed in 1996, I'd be like, Magic Maker is the greatest glide bait ever made. You know, or whenever they came out. So,
right.
You know, whatever. Thanks, Dirty Dave. Keep on trucking. Jeff, I've heard about your top-loaded toad mod and think I understand how to make it. When do you throw this presentation and why? Greetings from Ohio. I've promised to show that in a video like 4 times on the podcast, and due to being busy, I've not shot it. Maybe tomorrow, since my finger's swollen up to hell and I'll actually be at home for once, I can do it. I'll have like a big Band-Aid on doing a toad thing. Okay, so if you don't know the toad, I take the hooks off the bottom, I make a wire for the longer one and put it in the back, and the one in the top, email me, I'll send you a picture of it. Sorry, I suck. I use that when I'm not fishing vegetation. So it's a very similar thing to say like a tube presentation where it's going down and it's coming up, going down, coming up. You don't rip a toad. You pump the rod up and down. I'm using that when I'm fishing timber or the bottom where I'm worried about getting stuck. And if I really want to make bottom contact, so I pop it up and it flutters down and it touches. And I pop it up and it comes up again. and it's going to touch. If I'm making constant bottom contact, putting the hooks on the top of the toad is ridiculous. The other thing I do with my toads, they sell them at the Muskie Shop, are short shank 7-0s from Tyrant. They're the same hooks I put on my Bondies, and they're these super short shank 7-0 hooks. I put them on all my toads. The hookup ratio is phenomenal on them. And here's this big old honking hook on the top of the toad. The toad falls down. On occasion, depending on which toad I get, I might put a tick of weight on one of the hook hangers just to balance him back out so he's not rolling over just a little bit. And I'm able to make constant bottom contact with that bait. It hits the bottom, boom. Dirt smacks up, looks like a fish that's feeding. It pops up, boom, it hits again. Pops up, hits again. Smack, musky on the end. How do you
hop on the toad?
How do you hop your toad, Jay?
That's exactly how I hop mine. Wow.
You're a toad copycat.
A lot of people really want to know. You should definitely do that video because there's Fred at work wanted to know about that too.
How do you
it's unbelievable.
Your toad?
Yeah, just rig them on the top, you know?
It sounds
those Lake X toads, you know. It's like we've said that, we've kind of gone over that before. It's like don't run those wrong. Don't rip them like a Medusa. They're not a Medusa.
It's a different presentation. It is a different deal. To me, and I've said it before, bulldogs and Medusa, tubes and toads.
Mm-hmm.
Tubes and toads, they go hand in hand. Slightly different, but they're similar enough that it matters. You know, Jay, thinking about that one lake we like to fish there in St. Germain. We got some toad action there. Had to get real down and dirty, and we were tubing it, and we had, you know what? Need to get a little toadier. And I don't know if
I remember you said that.
Yeah, hold on. I feel it. I feel it in my musky bone. I need to get toadier.
Jim shook his head. He's like, I don't understand this guy.
How can this guy get any toadier? And then he did.
Yeah. How could he? Fright.
Then he knew. He was like, you know what? He got toadier.
Next level hopping.
Next level toadist. Mm-hmm. Jay, in high school, were you a first chair toadist?
Yep.
Anyway, folks, I apologize because I'm retarded. Musky 360 Podcast. Retarded. Good night.
Good night.